Hi everyone, I'm Simon Huebner, and welcome to Inside Asperger's, the show that tries to reach out to a world that absolutely determined that wasn't happening. The show that determines where I and my peers are different, instead of having it dictated to us. And most importantly, try to be concise in a world where that comes naturally difficult. And try to be concise when that is naturally difficult. Today's episode, I'm happy to introduce a new friend of mine. We were introduced through a mutual friend who was very interested to hear what two adults diagnosed with Asperger's have to say about our experiences, our mindsets, and mostly being diagnosed with something before it inexplicably became cool. My guest today is a man of many talents. He's a multi-instrumentalist, a very skilled thespian, a film buff, most importantly a husband and father. Please welcome my friend Mark Schroeder. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You drove quite a ways to come down and record, so I'm very grateful for that.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Our mutual friend, she had approached me. I know her through comedy, and you know her through your wife.
Yes.
Okay. I don't like naming names, but she knows who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And she had said, you know, my friend's husband has Asperger's, and she said a lot of nice stuff about you, and she just said, I just want to hear about how awesome you are. Clearly, she has a high opinion of you. How did you learn what Asperger's was?
It was in the mid-90s when I was diagnosed, late 90s.
Okay. Around what age group does this put you around?
16 or 17.
Okay. Had you had any sort of therapy or anything like that beforehand?
Yes. When I was 13 is when I started seeing a therapist.
Okay. And was that for any sort of learning difficulties or just any sort of problems fitting in or getting along?
A little bit. Fitting in.
Yeah.
Self-esteem stuff.
Yeah. It's all pretty common, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there was a lot of other sensory problems or speech problems, which can be common in a lot of kids diagnosed as Asperger's, right?
Correct.
I guess what I'm saying is a lot of your experiences, it's going to be a mixed bag. One, people don't really know what this stuff is, so it's not like people have any advanced scouting report on it. It's more of either, why are you doing this thing, or trying to understand why this thing would sort of set you apart, because it's not really natural to want to be set apart. You want to belong.
Mm-hmm.
And doing a podcast, playing music for you, acting for you, comedy for me, any hobby for that matter, it's always to sort of reach out to others.
Yes.
Did you learn it more from a book, or did you learn it more from a doctor, or from your parents?
Combination of from a doctor and from my parents.
Yeah, makes sense. Do you ever ask, maybe parents just naturally remember all kinds of stories from growing up that you wish they wouldn't, but did they remind you? That must have been pretty common.
Yes, my mom kept a diary, still has it, of funny things, funny stories about things I did and things my sister did.
Wow, that's not really something you think of a parent doing, but that's pretty unique.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's like a chance for growth and to realize you weren't that person.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God she wasn't having her phone out during all said embarrassing moments.
Yeah.
Because then that will be stored in a cloud somewhere, and you're like, oh, someone's going to see this.
Yeah, I'm glad that wasn't a thing back in those days.
Yes. Now, you have two young children.
Yes, they're 5 and 10. They're in kindergarten and fifth grade.
First off, how well did they get along? And are you scared about a lot of what I just mentioned about phones and everything being recorded?
They get along pretty well.
Cool.
Overall. The younger one especially is really enjoying being at the same school as his older brother.
Cool.
And yeah, I probably have some pictures and videos of things that they don't know I have, but if they knew, they would be embarrassed. If not now, one day.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense. The whole thing is kind of ironic because when people think of autism or Asperger's, when people think of adults our age, usually it's in terms of relationships, a lot of self-sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
We're not used to thinking about a happy family life. So I do want to commend you on having a great family. And I do wonder, have you noticed any common Asperger traits throughout your family?
I've never really thought about cousins or anything like that. So I would say no, that's never been something on my radar.
Right. Just wondered, once you start realizing, okay, I've got this diagnosis, it's like your mileage might vary, but felt like there was part of my brain that said, wait a minute, I could look at this thing, I could look at that thing. How am I the different one?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to come up with an example. I just never agreed with the notion of someone being neurotypical. I just felt like we were always living in a rude world.
Mm-hmm.
So to just understand social cues, unwritten rules, and all that, yeah, I can see why people are saying it's a problem, but there's so many examples. We're living in a rude world, a world that doesn't have a lot of patience. So it was always very easy to look at that and say, oh, really, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You ever felt that way?
Yes.
You have any examples?
Nothing's jumping out at me.
Okay. I guess we're thinking about it, you know, learning what the diagnosis was as teenagers. That's probably the era where you think you know the most.
Mm-hmm.
Or I did.
Yeah. I started writing songs in 1996 when I was 15. All of my first album is songs written 22 years ago in 96. I was very prolific that year.
Wow. And what's the album name?
Volume 1.
Okay.
Very creative title.
You have, in fact, recorded 4 albums.
Yes.
Which instruments do you play and how did you get started in music?
My first instrument was the piano.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that at a very young age, like 5 or 6.
How most kids usually start learning
mm-hmm.
music.
And then in 1993, when I was 12, I picked up the guitar. And then a few years later, I got really good at harmonica in like the 99, 2000. And those were my primary three for a while. And then in 2006, when I got married
mm-hmm.
and went to a honeymoon in Hawaii, my new wife was really trying to get me to buy a ukulele, not just a cheap $20 ukulele. Like, I ended up getting a $600
wow.
ukulele. She recommended that, and it was pretty easy to pick up. It's tuned. Like, have you ever played a ukulele?
I have not, no.
Do you play guitar?
I have barely gotten a chance to play. I started learning a little bit. I would love to have more time to just sit and learn a few songs.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, a ukulele is tuned like it's the last four strings of a guitar, a fourth higher. So like the fingering for a D on the guitar would be a G on the ukulele, and so on. So once I figured that out, I was in Hawaii and I just bought this ukulele. I'd never touched one before. But by the time I got home, I had a repertoire of about 10 songs. I just kind of found the notes and just figured out my favorite songs.
Wow, cool. You look at the interest that people have, and music's one of the best ways you can steer someone like us.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain things that are supposed to connect with folks' hearts.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first song you learned to play on each of the instruments you described?
On piano, it was probably just whatever the piano teacher
yeah.
gave me in the little book.
Maybe scale or something like that.
Yeah. On guitar, I remember Get Back by the Beatles, and then She Came In Through the Bathroom Window by the Beatles, the first two that I played on guitar.
And you must have picked it up pretty quick.
Yeah. Of the 12 instruments that I play, piano is the only one that I've ever had a formal lessons on. The other 11, I literally taught myself. And now I teach some people those lessons that I never had formal lessons for.
Wow, you must have. Is it perfect pitch?
Yes.
Okay, we've named piano, harmonica, ukulele, and guitar. So that's 8 other instruments that we have not even touched on yet.
Yeah, I have a list on my phone of my instruments that I play and the order that I learned them in. Piano, guitar, harmonica, ukulele, banjo, upright bass, mandolin, violin, accordion, melodica, auto harp, and lap steel.
Wow, a lot of electronic instruments and strings.
Yes, most of them are stuff that you can play and sing at the same time.
Oh, cool. Did you ever try drums?
A tiny bit. Not much. I think my rhythm sucks.
You're probably your own harshest critic there.
Mm.
But the drums would certainly not be conducive to singing.
Right.
With a few exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're also into acting.
Yes.
We'll talk a little bit about that, but did you think that music and acting helped you socially a great deal?
Yes.
How did you get interested in acting?
That was the first thing I was interested in. I was, I've always been a big movie buff.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents let my sister and me, at a very young age, watch an R-rated movie with them, Stand By Me, based on the Stephen King.
A great movie.
Yeah, based on the Stephen King novella. It's awesome. It was that movie in particular that made me realize that I wanted to do that or something like it.
Cool. You've had a lot of stage experience in Metro Atlanta.
Yes.
What companies have you performed with and where and what plays?
My first professional theater gig was in 1992, the summer of 1992, I was in a production of The Music Man.
Cool.
With the Theater of the Stars company at the Fox Theater.
Were you on the 76 trombones?
No. Have you ever seen the show or seen the movie?
Yeah, it's been a while.
My character's name was Winthrop, the kid. He has a lisp,
uh-huh.
and he sings that Gary, Indiana song. Ron yeah, Howard played yeah. him in the movie version.
Yeah. How hard is it to take a lisp?
It was pretty easy for me. I got some coaching from a theater friend who had directed me in a couple of plays before that, and he had played Winthrop as a child, so we got together with me and helped me with the lisp, but it came very naturally.
Yeah, you just have to remember the specific sounds.
Yeah, and actually, in the script, all of Winthrop's lines are written phonetically, like there are THs instead of S's in there, and that helps.
That makes it easier, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other favorite roles?
Yes. I got to play Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors
nice.
Twice.
Cool.
I played it at the Holly Theater in Dahlonega in 2003, and then I played it again at the Cumming Playhouse in 2005.
Wow.
And three dream roles that came true for me was I got to play in this musical that you probably haven't heard of called Baby. Maybe you have, I don't know.
There are certain things that might have to be explained. Like earlier, D chords, G chords, that's a certain way to hold your fingers on a guitar. Mm-hmm. So tell us about a Baby.
It's about three couples, a 20-something couple, a 30-something couple, and a 40-something couple who get pregnant at about the same time. And I played the guy in the 20-something couple.
And that was the dream role?
Yes, one of my big dream roles I finally got to play. I was 28, almost 29, when I got to play this 21-year-old.
Nice.
So when I went to the audition, I wasn't sure if they were going to consider me for the 20-something guy or in the 30-something, because I was kind of in that gray area. So yeah. The director did read me for both roles.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really the younger character's name is Danny, mm-hmm. and I ended up getting Danny, which is what I wanted. And I like that play because Danny has all the best songs in the show, I think.
Nice.
And I was always a big fan of the music.
Okay.
So that was a real special one.
Right. What were the other two dream roles?
Well, the following year, at the same theater company as Baby, I got to be in my ultimate dream role in my favorite musical of all time, The Fantastics.
Nice.
I had been in The Fantastics before, but as a different character, not the one that I'd always wanted to play.
Was it the son who ends up with the daughter of the neighbors who can't stand each other?
Matt.
Right.
Was the character's name. I was Matt. And that's who I'd always wanted to play.
The main protagonist?
Yes.
Awesome. You fall in love and you're kind of a bad boy also in the eyes of the girl's dad?
Yeah.
Through no fault of your own, by the way.
He takes quite a journey.
Yes, so that leaves one more dream.
Yes, and I didn't get to play the dream role, but it was a dream show. Have you heard of a musical called Forever Plaid?
You'll have to explain what that one's about. I might have heard the title, but you'll have to explain what it's about.
It's four guys, they sing barbershop quartet type stuff, very tight harmony. And in 1964, they're on their way to perform their first big gig ever, and they're killed in a car crash by a group of, I think it's crazed teenage girl fans on their way to go see the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. And so Forever Plaid takes place in the present day where the four guys are dead. They've been in limbo and they come back to put on the performance that they never got to do when they were alive.
Which is interesting when you consider that a lot of boy bands that popped up much later than that are a lot like barbershop quartets in that they all sing a cappella. They just have heavy synthesizer music behind them.
Mm-hmm. And my favorite character in Forever Plaid was the one I didn't get to play, and I'm probably too old to be in that show now, but his name was Sparky. I did not get to be Sparky. I was a different character named Frankie. But it's a four-guy show. There are no bad roles in that one, so they're all interchangeable. Changeable pretty much anyway. And I did record on my 16-track a one-man Forever Plaid. I was the orchestra and I recorded all four voices.
Wow, so you're stacking the lyrics, right?
Yep.
Was that your second album?
My albums are all original music. Okay. I haven't released my Forever Plaid stuff.
Okay.
Because I didn't write those songs and I don't know if I want to deal with royalties and stuff.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
Yeah.
But a lot of times when people release songs, they'll do it through YouTube. It is a way of saying, hey, here's my cover. Now look at some of my other music.
Yeah, I do have tons of covers on YouTube.
Is that under your name?
Yes, it's youtube.com/ my initials followed by my birthday, which is MWS 51581, Mark W. Schroeder, right. May 15th, 1981.
Gotcha. You know, it's interesting seeing folks around our age range, early, mid-80s, part of us are Aspergers. Those of us who are Aspergers, and then we sort of watch peers of ours, and they're also going to become parents, and it's going to be real interesting to see who gets it.
Yeah.
As it pertains to their kids, as it pertains to managing a family,
mm-hmm.
and who's not going to be as understanding. I'll be diplomatic.
Mm-hmm.
You ever wonder about that?
Yeah. My 10-year-old is just like me.
Yeah.
I wonder if he is an Aspie or if he'll ever find out or want to find out. And I'm just like my mother, and people say that I am exactly like my grandmother, my mother's mother.
Really?
Yeah. She was the first of my grandparents to pass away, so she's the one that I remember the least.
Right.
That I don't remember as well.
Do you also come from a very musically inclined family?
I have a few cousins who play the guitar. I can't think of anyone else in the family who plays 12 instruments.
Yeah, and the good thing about recognizing traits in your kid and a parent is that you can directly engage them. You don't even have to say, well, this little trait, that little trait, this little symptom that I saw.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm only saying this from working with kids. One of them did just tell me the other day, you look like you'll never have kids, but you'd be a great dad. This kid gets it with schoolwork.
Yeah.
That means to raise a kid, you have to spend a lot more time on schoolwork than you did as a kid because you're trying to give them also opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to show them, okay, this is how you reach a goal and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you have to see what you're made of first before you start telling a kid, yeah, okay, there's this thing that you are.
Yeah.
Because my thing is, I guess I just wanted Asperger's to be treated much the same way as dyslexia or ADHD to where, yeah, there's a problem with learning. Your mileage might vary compared to mine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something kind of simple and you could get the strategies to say, okay, here's how I work around it rather than saying, oh, something happened. I wish it hadn't. This is unfortunate. And then thinking, okay, I'm a screw up. I'm a failure. Here we go again. This is everything that I'm doing and everything I'm ever going to be. And a lot of this comes down to mindset in a way. There must have been a number of misunderstandings growing up.
Yeah, there were.
Did it seem like, would you say these things happen more around kids or adults?
Probably adults.
Yeah. They might be used to things being cut and dry in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you sit still? Why can't you look at me in the eye and all that?
But mm-hmm.
then you start overcompensating, focusing too much with the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that sound familiar?
Yes. Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors is a nervous guy and awkward and dorky, the kind of thing I get cast in a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's my type.
Okay. I'm interested more about, do you ever play against type, or is it easier to just focus on one type of character?
I've played against type before. One of the very few times, if not the only time, I got to play a villain was in Big River, which is based on the Mark Twain books, Huck Finn stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's a musical. The music was written by Roger Miller. It's very country and folk sounding. I've been in Big River twice. The first time I was in the show, I was the king, and he does and says some pretty despicable things, but I found it was interesting that I felt a kinship with the character just because it was a role assigned to me. I found that I started to want, that on stage I wanted to want the same things that my character wanted. Once I was out there, it was very easy to get into that character, even though I was doing some things that I, in Mark Schroeder in real life, would never do.
That's why it's called acting, I suppose.
Yes.
Did you study theater in college?
No, not really. I took a few classes in community college at Georgia Perimeter. I'm not a college graduate. I kind of went off into the world. I was never that great of a student. School kind of brought out the worst in me.
Pretty common experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room for a student who just did okay, who did enough to just get the Hope Scholarship in Georgia. Mm-hmm. There's not really a room for the student who wasn't really coached up but is still trying to manage as best they can. That's more the sort of thing I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it may look like. Do you ever run into any problems with your peers?
A little bit. It was mostly girls I had crushes on. I'm not a handsy type person, anything like that, but I know I made some people feel uncomfortable back in the day.
Right. That comes with figuring out what to do or what not to do, but I gotta say, we're recording this early October 2018. Not being handsy is a huge advantage right now.
Mm-hmm.
Gigantic advantage.
Yes.
So if you can keep your hands off of somebody, it's surprising how many people cannot say that they did.
Right.
Which was another way of potentially making someone real uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Some people tend to like their space and that should be respected.
Mm-hmm.
You might run into the same problem that I might, where it could be via text, via email. You always have to want to stick to probably the 24-hour rule. Like, do I wait to send this email or text?
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying too much? Saying too little? It sounds like these are both things that could very easily happen to you, I, and others like us. And frankly, to the outside world.
Yeah. Yes.
Because you would have to teach your kids, okay, how to send an email. Here's how you greet somebody. Here's what you really want to say. Your salutation at the end. It's no different than when we were implored to write thank you notes after our birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, do you stay in touch with a lot of folks that you grew up with?
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing to have if you're around some folks who did support you.
Yes. I even stay in touch with people, a few people who I remember from Rochester, New York. I lived there from 1982 to 1989, and I even keep in touch with some of my elementary school teachers, and I went to Greater Atlanta Christian School from 6th grade to 8th grade, mm-hmm. which for me was 1992 to 1995, and I keep in touch with some students, teachers, and even some of the principals there on Facebook.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You must have grown up in some tight-knit communities.
Yes.
And you also provide the music for your church?
Yes. I've been playing there since January 2016.
Cool.
I don't know the exact number, but it's in the 40s.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I guess you must rearrange your songs for hymns and psalms and that sort of thing?
We play contemporary Christian rock. My default instrument there is the keyboards, but occasionally they get me on a guitar or mandolin or harmonica, and sometimes I sing.
Cool. That's pretty cool. I asked another guest this. Here's a bad pun. Would you say the church has been like a sanctuary for you?
Yes.
That's pretty cool. That's something that is definitely needed in whichever forum.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to get baptized there a week from Sunday on the 14th.
I probably would have taken that for granted that it was a foregone conclusion had you not mentioned it. Figured being music, okay, yeah, you're a very committed member. I guess a lot of the people whom you had stayed in touch with, they were pretty good about being patient, right?
Yes.
Cool. That's pretty rare. How do you think social worth or self-worth was judged when you were growing up?
It was always so important to be with the right crowd and all that kind of stuff. Maybe it still is now.
That's kind of vague. I mean, you could say you are who you run with.
Right.
But the right crowd, that could mean, oh, the popular kids like a John Hughes movie. That could mean people who are more quiet intellectual types. That could mean things like, okay, we'll just stay out of trouble.
Yeah. There was one time somebody got on my case, a fellow student, that I was talking to myself and that he mentioned that he could see my lips moving the entire class period. And from that point on, for the rest of the year or for the rest of the time that I shared a classroom with him, I made a conscious effort to not do that again. I actually tried to adjust myself, be like a chameleon and cater to them, which is what I always try to do, is stretch myself. And I was, oh, I did something and you didn't like it? Okay, I'm sorry. I'll try not to do that and I'll be the way you like me to be.
Right. At an age where brains don't really develop or have barely developed, you did a thing, and you start the self-consciousness part, that I'd be willing to say that's pretty common, and it certainly sounded familiar to me. Does your wife share your film and theater and music interest?
A little bit. She goes to see all my shows and stuff.
Cool.
She was never really an actress. She was involved in a couple of shows that I was in. She ran the light board for a production of Hair that I was in. And then she was in Into the Woods, Stephen Sondheim's musical.
Cool. How does she spend her days?
She works for Auto Trader.
Ah.
In web design and usability testing.
Oh, cool.
I think I said the right title. Sure, she'll correct me if I didn't.
Yeah, that's something else that doesn't get mentioned. We're not all techies.
Right.
I'm more skilled with hardware. I'm not that functional with software, but I'm interested to see if your wife says, hey, you said that right. Yeah, definitely let me know what she has to say about that.
Okay, yeah. So whenever anybody asks me what she does, that's what I tell people, so I hope I am saying it right.
Yeah, it sounds like there would be a right way and a wrong way to say, hey, it's this instead of that. And it sounds like, to be doing well enough to where you're married, it sounds like you would have figured that out better than most. How'd y'all meet?
We met through my best friend's group of friends.
Ah, cool.
I told the story very specifically on Facebook a couple years ago. I'll find it and I'll tag you in the post so you can see it.
Okay, you can feel free to share the version right now.
Okay. I'm trying to think, should I pull up my phone and search for the post and read it?
No, just go off of what you remember.
Okay. But we decided to become boyfriend and girlfriend on Monday, August 20th, 2001.
Oh, wow.
And the first time I remember seeing her was in July of 2000.
Okay.
I had gone with my best friend to somebody's house to watch a movie. They had rented a video from Blockbuster Video, really dating myself by using those terms. We're watching, I remember what it was, The Insider with Al Pacino and Russell Crowe.
I don't feel bad because I remember Blockbuster quite well also.
Yeah, I loved Blockbuster.
Yeah.
I loved walking in there and making impulse buys, walking through the aisles of the previously viewed videos.
Oh man, you must have had so much fun. When they went out of business, you must have been able to pick up so much, them and Borders.
Yes. So anyway, the first time I saw her, we had gotten together to watch The Insider at a friend of my best friend's house, and she came a little bit late, and she was with this guy that I go way back with. We were in the same class together in fifth grade. I guess we don't name names here, so we'll call him John. I was thinking, who's that girl who's with John? I hope she's not with him. And then I guess they rode there together and they left together, and she seemed kind of shy and didn't really talk that much. My first impression of her was, oh, she must be a real not nice person. But it turned out she was just really shy. I explain it so much better in the Facebook post because I communicate so well in writing.
Yeah.
I got to type it all out and edit and make it good. Let's see. You want me to continue? Tell you more? Or?
Well, first off, you guys must have been friends first before you all made it official.
Yes.
And you've been together virtually all of this millennium.
Yeah. I've known of her since July of 2000. She's been on my mind almost the whole millennium.
Yeah. It's been more than 10 years since you've been married?
Yes. October 28th, 2006 was when we got married.
I was coming up on a dozen years.
Yep.
You seem really good about remembering dates.
Yes.
I think a lot of people would be wondering, when did you disclose your Asperger's to her?
I don't remember that exactly, but it was probably pretty early in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty casually that I let it out. It wasn't a big coming out.
Yeah. What's interesting about that is it's really nothing to be embarrassed about for you. A lot of people might feel that way. But I can say this, you're a lot more comfortable about owning up to it than I would have been.
It took a while to get to that point.
Yeah.
And still not something I bring up frequently.
Which is what makes it all the more special that we're willing to share our stories and memories and our perspectives.
Yeah, I am in a Christmas carol at the Shakespeare Tavern every year. This year will be my third year in the show. Every year we do a sensory-friendly performance.
Oh, cool.
And there's another cast member who is on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So it has started up a conversation between me and him about I'm on the spectrum too. And, you know, he asked me when I found out, how old I was. And
is he a younger actor?
No, he's quite older. I think he's in his late 50s.
Oh, gotcha.
And he found out much later in life than I did.
Yeah, anytime I hear about older people or someone has this family member or an older person saying, yeah, Asperger's, there's a lot they must have had to figure out on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They also had to learn how to handle life with a lot less help, which means they can stand on their own pretty well. There could also be some unfortunate trauma in there. What does the Shakespeare Tavern do to make a presentation sensory friendly?
With a Christmas carol, the lights never go down all the way.
Right.
And usually we say no cell phones or electronics during the performance, but for this one particular performance, they're allowed to have their phones out. The general stage volume and intensity is dialed down by about 25%.
Okay.
Which is a very fun and fascinating acting exercise for us.
Yeah.
Because we're used to doing everything and projecting things a certain way, and when we just bring it down just a little bit, it gives it a very different vibe.
Yeah, like what you said about it being a different exercise and doing new things.
Mm-hmm.
It's ironic, I was looking up the new definition of autism to where they de-emphasized empathy and social skills and made it about fixed routines, which means when you're doing something a little bit different, then wait a minute, are you sure this describes me? But also, a lot of people are going to like a routine, are going to need a routine, crave a routine, and it must be rewarding, fun for them to go out and do something fun.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the comic coming out. Like, I'm always trying to look stuff up, trying to see, all right, how can I joke about this?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do have a lot of respect for being able to play different characters, not just seeing yourself in different characters, but also it's hard to tap into what this character wants, needs, or motivates them.
Mm-hmm.
So hats off to you.
Oh, thank you.
And you've got four albums. Are they volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Yes.
Okay. Where can fans of yours find your music?
You can search my name, Mark Schroeder, S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R. These albums are on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play. I'm on Spotify. And if you have an Amazon Alexa or an Echo, you can stream my music. And you can listen to each individual track from all four albums on YouTube. They've been automatically put on there. It's something separate from my channel, which I use to film myself playing songs.
Cool. All the instruments and all that.
Yep.
And Reverb Nation, that's how I found out about the first
Yes. one. Yeah, I sent you something through my Reverb Nation page as well.
Yes.
That's got a few random odds and ends.
Yes. The B-sides, if you will.
Yes.
I'm trying to look up the song title right now.
Retaliation, I think, is the one I sent you.
Indeed it is. Yes. It's almost like I have a selective... Not selective. It's almost like I have to see or hear something a few times.
Mm.
I feel bad. I just listened to the song Retaliation. I should have been able to remember it. The experiences are pretty similar. I'm more of a try to listen to the music, not the lyrics type of guy.
Yeah, me too. Sometimes it takes a long time for lyrics to sink in.
Yeah. When you're happy, you listen to the music.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sad, you listen to the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You ever watch somebody, a well-known artist, play a breakup song at a live concert and everybody's singing along and you're just like, that's a lot of heartbroken people in the crowd?
Yes.
Glad I'm not the only one. You're going and touring, that would not be conducive towards longer-lasting relationships, so it's easy to see how you keep writing breakup songs,
mm-hmm.
or how this relationship played games with your head.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have this sort of YouTube channel that's it shows you playing the different instrumental parts on all the different songs?
No. Well, these are more live performances. It's a little different from the albums where I overdub things one by one. It's me playing some songs as if I were playing for an audience.
Yeah.
And occasionally I do a tutorial or how-to video if somebody asks me how to play a certain song.
Oh, cool. Did you do all the instruments on your albums?
Yes. I single-handedly recorded everything you hear.
Cool.
And volume one is all stuff that I wrote in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Volume two takes us from stuff written from 1996 to 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Volume three goes from 99 to 2006. And volume four, which is really the only new one, takes us from 2010 to 2018.
Okay. You ever look back at older songs and see how you've evolved as a person?
Yeah, and some songs are ones that I write way back in the day, maybe didn't become relevant for a while, and then maybe become relevant again.
Yeah.
That's happened from time to time.
Really?
Yeah, and I guess it's a sign of my age that a couple of times in the lyrics to some of the songs on Volume 4, I do a lyrical throwback to an earlier song of mine.
Gotcha. When you're trying a bunch of different things, always taking chances and changing up what you're doing is a lot like cross-training. I always felt if you do just one thing while you're expressing yourself and only do that one thing, that's a little bit like going to the gym and skipping leg day.
Mm-hmm. I'm a runner, too.
Okay.
I became a runner in 2011.
All right, so
I started with a Couch to 5K program.
Nice.
That's one of my obsessions, I guess.
Cool. I guess the leg day analogy does not hold up, seeing as how you ran miles over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Have you run half marathons or marathons?
No, the most I've done is 10K.
Okay.
The only reason I never went into half marathon training or anything beyond a 10K. It's a time-consuming thing, yeah. And I'm a father of two, so
right.
Maybe one day. I don't know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I totally would have made that leap, but not yet.
Yeah. What is the longest run you have ever been on?
Well, every day I run for an hour uninterrupted.
Okay.
I don't go for distance. I just go for time and continuity.
Yeah.
And my hour each day is somewhere between 7 and 8 miles.
Mm-hmm.
I usually start at 9 miles an hour and slowly go down to 5 by the end.
Yeah.
So running a 10K race for me is kind of easy because that's a little bit less than what I typically do every day anyway. And a 5K race is really easy. That's less than half of what I typically do.
Gotcha. That's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest part about running is possibly avoiding shin splints, having the right posture throughout all that.
Yes. I did get shin splints once about a year ago, and it was about a month and a half until I was able to run normally again.
Yeah.
The reason why the album cover of Volume 4 is a running track mm-hmm. is because I felt it was appropriate to put that on there.
Yeah, appropriate metaphor, yes.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Especially because of the time period, 2010 to 2018, was when I wrote most of those.
Right. How often do you get to perform those songs?
Not as often as I would like to. I'd love to get my foot in the door playing at restaurants and stuff, but I'm not sure how to get into that. Maybe it'll be easier now that I actually have albums out officially.
You know, it never hurts to ask if you're at a different place. Some places might be welcoming, some places might not be. I've had a few friends who would go around, play music before I got into comedy, where I'll know people who, oh, we're going to this place. Now there's a show.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place that you like. I guess it never hurt to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Chat with the owner, somebody like that.
Yeah.
This has been a great chat, Mark. How would a listener reach out to you directly through social media?
I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm pretty open on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You can look me up on Facebook. I'll probably accept your friend request. My profile picture is me wearing a suit offering Altoids to the camera. That
nice.
Is an inside joke for the people who know me very well. I am the man who always has Altoids. And offers them a lot. And I think the reason why I do that is there's the shallow reason and the deep reason.
I'll hear both.
Okay, yeah, I'll tell you the not so deep reason first. I started offering Altoids to everybody in 2004. I had just done a play in December of 2003 called the 1940s Radio Hour. It takes place at a radio station in the 1940s. There could be 3 or 4 or 5 people huddled up singing into one microphone. That made me want to start always carrying mints on me, and then it just became a thing that I do.
Nice.
And but I think really it makes me feel like I'm good for something. Like I provide value. A very long time ago, like 20 years ago, in my late teens, I went through an obsessive phase where I always had to say hi to everybody in the room, and mm-hmm. I would get really agitated if somebody didn't return the hello immediately.
Oh, yeah.
I always made sure that every single person was greeted. I wonder if the Altoid thing is the always saying hi phase coming back in a less intrusive way.
Gotcha.
Because with the Altoids, there could be two people talking or whatever, and I can just kind of put it in there, and they can keep on talking. I'm not interrupting the flow of conversation. They can just take one. And...
Yeah. How did you get to the point where I have to say hello to every single person in the room?
I don't know. I think it's because I like people. Yeah. And I'm genuinely happy to see them, and I want to greet people, and there's still a little bit of that, the butterflies and anxiety, when I'm at a big theater function, like an awards ceremony. Atlanta has two awards ceremonies, the Susie Bass Awards, which honors professional theater. I guess it's Atlanta's equivalent of the Tonys. And then there's the Metro Atlanta Theater Awards, which is for community theater, which is really great that every kind of theater is being honored. I've been to some Metro Atlanta Theater Awards ceremonies and Susie ceremonies, and there's an overwhelming number of people there that I know. It feels like being one of those celebrities at the Oscars where everybody...
Or the Tonys, yes.
And so I have an overwhelming urge to try to go around and say hi to everybody I know.
Nice.
There is still a little bit of that, you know, wanting to...
I'm sure they appreciate being acknowledged.
Yeah, I've had people tell me that I make them feel important.
Awesome. Great quality to have. You coined the term Suzmat. That's someone who's been honored at both awards, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Kind of like they call somebody who's had an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony an EGOT. And I was wondering, what would you call somebody who's won both a Matt Award and a Susie?
Yeah.
So I thought maybe Suzmat or Matsy or something.
Yeah. Suzmat fits.
Yeah.
That flows a little bit better.
Uh-huh.
Your Twitter and Instagram handles, what are those?
I don't remember offhand, but they're probably Mark W. Schroeder.
Okay.
All lowercase letters, no punctuation or space in between.
Anybody who's interested, I'm sure they'll be happy to follow you. If not, we'll see if they follow the right Mark W. Schroeder. Anyway, it's been a great chat. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
By the way, I do try to have snacks or drinks for my guests, and after you brought up your Altoid story, I was trying not to laugh, bringing peppermints, having them available.
That's okay. I have my own Altoids.
Yeah, that's fine. That's cool. It was more of a situation of, okay, now the shoe is on the other foot.
Yeah, it was kind of funny when I saw that.
And now I know why.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man, great chatting with you. Great to meet you.
You too.
All right, okay. The only thing that I missed, it was about 20 minutes, 30 seconds in when Mark was talking about being self-conscious because of some silly quirk someone had pointed out, which could happen to anybody. It's the part where you make your mind up, just like anybody else. I've done that a few times before. Really, I think that's what the main part of Asperger's is. You're making up your mind no matter what, and that's it in a nutshell. The rest is extraneous riffraff. It's hard to know how to be truly comfortable in your own skin when you're self-conscious like that. Anyway, if you enjoyed this episode or any previous episodes, please leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at Inside Asperger's and on Twitter at InAspergerPod. As always, I thank you for listening. I look forward to having more content for you soon. Bye.